Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, we love our ice fishing in Wisconsin, and on the show today, we're going to talk to a couple of experts. John Carlson, one of them. John's manager and a guide at Ross's Sports Shop and Guide Service in Phillips, Wisconsin. John Carlson, welcome. He may be there. John Carlson, one of our guests. Skip Sommerfeld, the other guest. Skip, a retired Wisconsin DNR fish biologist. Skip, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you with us. So as we talk with our two guests, John and Skip, I hope you'll join in with your own questions and maybe your stories you got about ice fishing as well. But what questions do you have about ice fishing? Does your family participate? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Already have Randy from Ashland online, but Skip, let's go to you first. How did you get involved in ice fishing?
As long as I can remember, I just love fishing. Probably 7-8 years old when my dad would take me out to the piers on the Bay of Green Bay. And ever since then, I've just been a very avid angler. I'm kind of a numbers nut. I probably kept track of every fish I've ever caught, believe it or not. And I have numbers like you wouldn't believe. Actually, my last year of working with the DNR, I was able to summarize all my numbers and actually do a poster presentation on the number of hours, number of fish caught, everything like that. So I started out being an angler. When I found out I could actually have a career in fisheries, fish management, that's all I did. I went for that goal, and I achieved my goal.
That is absolutely great. Well, John Carlson, tell us about Ross's Sports Shop and Guide Service.
We're a sports shop, and it's been part of the community for 60 plus years. We purchased the shop, my family did, back in 1992, and we've been running it ever since. We offer all the fishing and outdoor tackle that you need for the area. And probably 1994. A couple of years after we started, we bought the shop. People were looking for some advice for fishing and how to, and we just started guiding from there.
Do you do it for ice fishing as well?
We do. I take people out ice fishing. It's a little smaller scale. We don't have as many guides that do it, but we do offer ice fishing trips as well. Yeah.
Well, I have a lot of fond memories of your area there, that Phillips area, because the first legal muskie I ever caught, I caught on Solberg Lake.
Yeah.
Which is many, many years ago, and I had caught a lot of undersized ones, but the first legal one, I guess you never forget, caught it on a globe bait, a surface bait, so it was an exciting one and one I'll never forget. Well, I'll tell you, how's the ice fishing been, Skip? And where do you like to fish?
I do most of my fishing locally around Park Falls, the local lakes. I've got a cottage out on local Butternut Lake, and I probably do most of my fishing out there. And to me, this winter so far, the fishing's been spotty. You have to find the good spots, and one day will be good, the next day will be, slow. But, that's what they say. That's fishing, not catching.
Well, I think Randy in Ashland, let's go to Randy, because I think he's ice fishing right now. Randy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, so you're fishing right now?
I'm sitting on Shawamigan Bay with my wife, yes. I'm 6 inches of good ice.
So how's the ice fishing for you?
Well, we've caught two splake this morning, undersized. So I have a question for the biologist there. I was just wondering what the growth rate of the splake are, if he knows.
They were 13 inches.
I was mostly an inland biologist, and about a 13-inch splake is probably at 2 years old, maybe three, you know, coming out of Lake Superior with the colder water.
Okay, that sounds good. I do a lot of inland fishing, too. I love fishing crappies, but the weather was so nice today, we decided to come up here on the bay and try our luck. So,
Well, Randy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And good luck out there. Keep catching those fish. Let's see. We've got Trigby and Marinette. I'm pretty sure that I got your name.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Right, Trigby. Hi, Skip.
Hey, Trig. Hey. How are you doing?
Good. Couple comments or questions. One is, where could I catch lutefisk? Yes, that's a joke. But the real reason, you know, and I'm not an ice fisherman, but I'm an ice boater. And believe it or not, there's a user conflict between ice boating and ice fishermen. And, you know, it doesn't happen real often, but and it's not a big deal. But do the ice fishermen, you know, look out for the ice boaters at all, or vice? I know we certainly look out for you guys because we're moving so fast, but in particular, the holes you bore, they could be a real danger for us to drop a runner in a hole.
Oh, well, that's one
I agree with that. And that's why when I go ice fishing, I usually mark my holes. Some snowmobilers complain about making ice humps out there, but I usually like to put a stick in them or a branch to show, you know, snowmobilers or anybody using the ice that there's an ice hole here and look out for it. So, you know, that's maybe a public information type thing you need to do to let anglers, you know, mark their holes and let your ice boaters, you know, avoid them.
Very good point. Trig, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or just email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, let's talk about the person who's never done it. What should a new ice fisher know before they go out? John, we'll start with you.
You know, that's where a ice guide comes in great. You know, we have all the tackle and everything that we can, and the spots, we know where the action lakes are. We can get you out on the spots and, have all the tackle you need. Otherwise, if you want to go on it yourself, you can, go to the local bait and tackle shop. You know, most of us are willing to help and point you in the right direction. Look for a lake where the fish might be smaller, but there's more abundance of them. And just keep it simple. You can get on some of these smaller lakes with abundance of fish and fish all day long and have fun. Maybe not keep any because they're smaller, but, you know, just a simple a waxy and a grub and, you know, a simple rod and reel, and you could be catching fish. You know, you don't need to have all the latest advancements to be out there and catch fish, but you know, start by talking to your local bait shop or you know, hire somebody like me or one of the other guides in the area.
Skip, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I'm mostly a tip-up fisherman, and what I've always recommended is that, you know, if you got kids, you know, as John said, find a lake, you know, with abundant northern pike population or an abundant walleye population. Go out, set some tip-ups, and, you know, rather than have a kid sit on the bucket and wait for the bobber to go down, let them run around, play, you know, bring a sled, pull them around, let them slide down the shoreline hill to the lake. And once you set your tip ups, you know, either northern pike are probably the easiest fish to catch through the ice. They'll hit anything from hot dogs to golden shiners, the suckers. And, you know, you can set it 2 foot below the ice. You can set it on the bottom. The pike will find it. And, you know, and that's the thing is just catching fish. And as John said, you know, if you catch a bunch of small ones, it's just getting them interested, the kids, and allowing them to catch fish and enjoy it.
You know, it's all about fun.
Yeah, it is indeed all about fun. One of the things that I did when I took some kids out on the ice, I took along my Coleman camp stove and a dozen eggs and some bacon and and some bread, and we had a little breakfast out there on the lake once we got everything set up, and the kids would get a little something to eat, and then they'd tear around the ice, and we caught a few fish, and it was just a nice day. And taking a Coleman or some sort of camp stove out there and having yourself a little meal is a fun way to do it as well. I don't know, have you guys ever done that? John, do you ever do that?
Yeah, we've actually done a youth fishing thing through one of the clubs in town here every year, and this year we can't because of the whole COVID situation, but we bring a Blackstone griddle out on the ice, and we do burgers and you know, just kind of have fun, let the kids fish a little bit, run around, do whatever they want. Give them a little fishing pole so that they can fish, set some tip-ups, wait for the flags to go up, and you know, it's kind of fun cooking out on the ice, eating out on the ice, and having fun with those kids.
Yeah. Let's take a call. Katrina in Grand Chute. We'll go to you now. Hi, Katrina.
Hi. I'm so thankful that you took my call. I am an older person, but I remember the stories of my my parents. My mother said that her brother used to camp out on Lake Winnebago, and the idea just terrified me because I was out there and I heard the ice crack, but also my dad, when he was younger, he used to skate across Lake Winnebago, and I can't imagine. And so that is about what I had to say. But I think it is so just so wonderful that we have, that we live near the lake.
Katrina, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. There are lots of stories like that, aren't there, Skip?
Oh, yes, there are. It's, you know, everybody's got memories of their ice fishing trips and good adventures, and a lot of them, you know, are fantastic.
Yeah, and staying overnight on the ice, and, you know, when that ice cracks, I've been on a lot of lakes where, well, Mendota, one where one of the main pressure cracks went while I was out on the ice, and it gets your attention.
There is a name for it. It's called ice quakes. And my cottage is on Butternut Lake by Park Falls, and I have a point that runs kind of close to another point across the lake, and it's always a pressure crack. And boy, when that ice expands and that crack heaves the ice, the whole height, the whole house will shake, and it'll be a loud booming sound, and you know, it'll scare you sometimes.
Kind of fun when you have somebody new on the ice and that first crack goes across the ice like that. You might be sitting on 2 feet of ice, but you get that pressure crack and, you know, it makes that noise. And it's kind of entertaining just watching the new people when that happens, too.
Absolutely. Well, Wanda from Orfordville's with us. Let's see what's on Wanda's mind. Hi, Wanda.
Hello, Larry. I just had a friend down in Beloit that told me a story about ice fishing yesterday. This was a seasoned ice fisher, a guy sitting out there. He'd been out there for, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours, and all he caught was one little panfish. And then a young dude came along and drilled a hole in the ice and dropped in his line, and pretty soon he pulled out a nice big walleye, and he took it off, and he rebaited, and he dropped it in, and then he pulled out a nice big northern. And so the old guy goes and says, "What's your secret? Come on, I've been out here for 6, 7 hours, and I've got one fish." And the kid said, "He said, what? I can't understand." And he said, "I can't understand the word you're saying." So the kid put his hand over his mouth, spit something out, and said, "You got to keep your worms warm."
Oh, now that's a typical ice fishing story. I love that. Thanks, Wanda, for calling. Hey, we're talking ice fishing on the show right now. Skip Sommerfeld, retired Wisconsin DNR fish biologist. John Carlson, he's a manager and a guide at Ross's Sports Shop and Guide Service in Phillips, Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. By the way, our producer is Jill Nadeau, our engineer, Michelle Good. Talking ice fishing on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest Skip Sommerfeld, retired Wisconsin DNR fish biologist, and John Carlson of Ross's Sports Shop and Guide Services in Phillips, Wisconsin. Great to have both of them with us. Give a call with your question or comment, maybe an experience to share at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Speaking of emails, go ahead. Sorry.
I wanted to comment on that last caller, the woman that was talking about somebody coming right next to her and, you know, catching a walleye and then a pike. Is like one thing I think I've discovered through my ice fishing is that fish actually have feeding trails they follow. I don't know if John will agree with me on that, but I found if you find a hot hole, you're on a feeding trail, and those fish follow that feeding pattern. And like I said, if you find that hot hole, you continue to fish that hole. And if you're 4 feet away, 6 feet away, 10 feet away, you might not get a fish. But when you find that good hole, you mark it and stay on it. John, do you have anything?
I think anybody who's ice fished has seen that. You know, you can be sitting right in the shack right next to your buddy ice fishing 2 feet, 3 feet apart, and one guy's always got the hot hole. One guy, you know, might catch one here and there, but there always seems to be, whatever area you're in, there always seems to be a hot hole or a hot couple of holes. Yeah, definitely, definitely something there.
John from Ironwood emailed to ask, where's the best place to find walleyes in midwinter? What about, and crappies as well, what about crappies and what types of things do you look for on a lake map? So three questions there, really. First, walleye in midwinter, where do you find them?
You know, I always in midwinter, the fish seem to be using the basin areas of the lake. The crappies will be out over the deeper areas of the lake, kind of, you know, maybe around some mid-lake structure, but pretty much in the basins. The walleyes, I usually tend to look for them, you know, in the daytime. They'll be off that that basin area on any kind of structure, not like right in the basin, but on that drop. you know, fish a lot of flowages where I'm at here, and they'll move into the shallows in the evening. But, you know, daytime, try to push out a little deeper. You can fish any wood structure you find. The edges of the river channels on our flowages are usually really good in the daytime, and then kind of up onto the shallower flats in the evening.
Yeah. And what about reading?
Skip the biologist, so you might have something to add to that.
Skip, you got something?
I pretty much agree with John that, you know, walleyes are a low light feeding period. Usually during the day on the waters that I fish, the walleyes tend to drop out and suspend in anywhere from, you know, 11 to 14 feet of water. And then towards low light periods, they come up shallower. Crappies are, you know, like John said, they suspend a little bit. If you can find some woody structure, you know, fish cribs, that sort of thing, or just find the deepest part of the lake, but they're never on the bottom. They're always suspended down, you know, minimum 8 to like 14 feet. And with modern electronics now, you know, it almost gets too easy for the anglers to, you know, to spot fish and then target them.
Right. Right. We've had a lot of discussions on social media the last few weeks. I don't know if anybody follows my personal page, or there's a couple other guides, and there's a lot of concerns about the modern electronics and how efficient you can be with catching fish, and just how you could hurt the lake if you're not careful going out there. Some of the days, the last few weeks, we've had 100, 150 people on one lake, and if they all go out there and they're efficient and keep their 10 fish limit, you know, that's 1,000 fish in a day that can be taken out of that lake. But with the modern electronics, you know, like Skip said, it's pretty easy to find fish now and catch them.
Well, what about the maps? What type of things do you look for on a lake map if you're, say, you're, you know, maybe even have the electronics?
If I'm targeting walleye, I'll look for some kind of mid-lake hump or structure. Skip was talking about points. You fish fit where the when he was talking about the pressure cracks, but you look for points that stick out into the main basin of the lake. Anything that bottlenecks the fish in the main lake basin or can hold fish, cribs, if you have a map, some of the mapping companies will put cribs on their maps. You know, those are all good places to start. Usually I tend to look for, in a lake I haven't fished for crappies, I'll try to get out into the deepest part of the basin this time of year and just start drilling holes and use my electronics to find them. But a good start is, you know, in the basin area and adjacent to some kind of mid-lake structure, like I said, point or something, or river channel bend if you're in one of the flowages. You know, something like that would be a good starting point.
Bill in Barneveld, let's give you a chance. Bill, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Larry, and the great program. Yeah, I grew up in junior high school and high school ice fishing on Nagalica Lake for Northerns near Delafield. And it's just so, it was a central part of my youth, because I'd go out there, you know, after a rough day at school, or maybe things weren't so good at home, and I just love the solitude and the silence of ice fishing, and just watching for tip-ups, being out on the ice alone. It was really important for me. I've gotten back into ice fishing after many, many years, and I have a technical question about catching northerns through the ice for your guests. When I was taught as a kid, when I had a tip-up on a northern, I'd go to the tip-up, look very carefully out, and usually the line often wouldn't be moving, or moving slowly as the pike stopped and turned the shiner or sucker around in its mouth. And then the time to set the hook is when it ran, it started its second run. I've since read in the column that that's not the way to do it. It's not the way guys do it on Lake Mendota near Madison, and I wonder if they have any thoughts on that. And I just want to add, I'm a throwback. I refuse to use electronics on the ice. I bow hunt with a recurve bow, and I still use an open sight 30-30 for deer hunting. So I'm not going to contribute to that problem, but I need some help finding fish.
All right. There you go. Bill, thank you so much. Well, John, we start with you and then go to Skip.
If you know that fish is there, a lot of us have switched over to the quick set rigs with double treble hook setup. And as long as there's tension there on that fish, usually you can get the hooks into the fish. You'd like it to be going away from you, but if you're a release fisherman and you want to let fish go, the quickest you can get the hook set is probably the best, because you don't want that fish, if you're going to let those fish go, you don't want that fish to get a hook down inside its throat, you know, down to where it's going to do damage to the gills or hit something vital. If I'm tip up fishing, I'm running a quick set rig, double hook, and that flag goes up, I'm on it pretty quick for the pike anyway.
Skip, what about you?
Well, for pike, I always, when I'm fishing pike, when I come up to the tip up with a flag up, if the spindle is turning, you know the fish has the bait, I do what is called T-boning them. You just grab the spindle, stop it from spinning, and just pull it up. And the fish is either there or not. And I really commend that guy for not using electronics, because I don't either. I go out based on my knowledge of the body of water, and then set accordingly. But what I use too is I take a treble hook, but I pinch off. I actually cut off one of the barbs on the hook, so it's a double hook. And then a lot of times, if it is deep hooked, you can just use a forceps, reach down the throat, and tip the hook and pop that hook out, and you can release them just fine. And people have to remember that, you know, if a fish is bleeding, it needs to be in the water to stop bleeding. So, you know, it may show a little bit of blood, but if you get her back in the water, a fish actually needs to be in the water to clot their blood.
No. Good points. Thanks, Bill, for calling. Appreciate it. Michael in Maple Bluff, your turn. Hi, Michael.
Hi there. So I'm also an ice sailor rather than an ice fisherman, but I always find it easy to spot where the holes are, because there's a little mound of ice where they've drilled the hole. More concern to me is those four-wheel vehicles that a lot of fishermen like to use, the ones that are not so concerned about having a quiet experience. If the ice surface is snowy or mushy, those four-wheel vehicles will leave a track wherever they go, and it's like a boat wake, except it's permanent. What do you think about that? All that technology, all of that internal combustion engine stuff being used on the lakes.
All right. Well, let's see what John has to say first, then we'll go to Skip.
I don't know what to think. We don't really have a problem. We don't really have any ice boaters up here, so I've never had to experience anything like that. So I guess it's like, I guess I don't really have a comment on it. We don't have.
You don't run into that.
There's usually enough snow on the lakes that I've seen one on the lakes up here in the last 30 years. So we don't run into it very much. So.
Well, maybe Skip has. Skip, what are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Skip,
what
are your thoughts?
Question, or do you want me to comment?
Just make a comment on that.
That is a complaint I've heard, is the ice holes, and I think the caller earlier, Trigby, mentioned that about leaving ice holes, and his ice boating gets into it. And, you know, snowmobilers as well. Personally, I fish right in front of my cottage. Right now I can look out. I see I make snow mounds, and I put a spruce branch on top of them to let people know that there is a hole there. And that's where I put my tip-ups. I've had several tip-ups run over by snowmobilers in the past. And as I look out on the lake now, it is virtually entirely covered with ATV and snowmobile tracks and, you know, anglers on the ice or any users of the lake have to be aware of, you know, there are hazards out there. There are ice heaves as well, you know, not only ice fishing holes, but ice heaves, snow drifts, everything. So, you know, be careful when you're traveling on a body of water.
Yeah, I can remember on Lake Mendota having to run like crazy when a plane came down and landed on the on the lake and then took off again. Oh my gosh, it was quite a. I had to move quickly. Let's put it that way. Mark in New London, New Lisbon. Your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
My question is ice fishing. All perch, 90% of these are females loaded with eggs. Why are the females so dominant in the numbers you catch?
Maybe I should comment on that first. Yeah, go ahead.
Being a biologist, usually the females are the faster growing, and they need to have enough nutrition to build their eggs. And, you know, female perch, you know, when you catch them, they're very round. So they're, I think, innately used to feeding and have to feed more to nourish their eggs for spawning in the spring. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, that makes good sense to me, too. But thank you, Mark, for calling. Bob in Crivitz. Yeah, Bob in Crivitz, your turn.
Yeah, good morning. Okay, I've got two comments. Okay, one, my son went to college in Minnesota, and one of his friends, a girlfriend, her parents lived on a lake in Wisconsin on the edge. Okay, and three guys got together, and they rented a three-bedroom one. Okay, so what they do is they take out three separate shacks, and they bolt them together. You can rent it for the whole month.
So a three-bedroom ice shanty.
Three-bedroom ice shanty. Okay, and then the other thing, I used to fish the backwaters of the Mississippi by Prairie du Chien, and a friend of mine introduced me to, you heard of the Pinky Jigs? Okay, this is Pinky Johnson. And I was fishing with a 3-pound test line jigging, and you're in about 4 to 6 feet of water. And he said, what do you have on there for bobber and I, a spring bobber on? He said, no, they said, that's no good. He opened up his snowmobile suit, he ties a piece of sewing machine thread right below your rod, just above the ice. Okay, and he sets it wet, he sets a Z in it. When that Z moves, you catch the fish.
Wow, John? Terrific. John, what do you think?
I don't know. I've never tried that. I'm pretty sold on spring bobbers right now for panfish and, you know, one of the most sensitive things out there. I don't know if I'd have the patience to watch that line move.
Okay, have a good one.
Thanks. Sounds like it'll work,
though. Yeah, if you keep your eyes on it, for sure. Well, the whole business about ice shanties, are there more of them or less of them now? Are people more likely to just move around? Or I suppose it depends on the water. John, first?
I think it depends on the winters. The last few winters, we've had a lot of snow, and we haven't had really thick ice up here in northern Wisconsin, so we get a lot of slush on the lakes, and then that causes the shacks to freeze in. And there are so many portable shacks out there now that, you know, insulated portable shacks, they're easy to set up. You can heat them fairly efficient. You can move around, so you know, the trend here in right in Phillips, anyway, it seems to be that there are less permanent shacks out there and more guys going portable now so they can move around and don't have to worry about getting that thing off in the spring. I think up where Skip's at on Butternut, it looks like there's still some permanent shacks up there, a little bit more than down here. But it seems like in the Phillips area, anyway, the trend seems to be going more portable than permanent shack out there.
Yeah. Skip, a comment from you. You got a bunch of them up there on Butternut?
Well, I totally agree with John. The last few years, we've seen much fewer permanent shacks because, like he said, the ice conditions, we've had a lot of deep snow, slush conditions. People have had their shacks frozen in and have had to get actually tractors out to pull them off. And, you know, it even gets to the point sometimes that they burn them and then just pick up the debris rather than trying to get them out of the ice. But, you know, more temporary shacks, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I worked DNR, I used to do a tour of Butternut Lake and actually count permanent ice shacks out. Some years I'd have 80 to 100, 110 shacks out there. I think last year I did my tour and I counted like 18. So, you know, this year, or I think I, you know, I could probably, I'm thinking there's maybe 15 or 20. But no, everybody's going to the, you know, the pop-up, the temporary shelters. So it is.
Yeah, I can remember my brother having one freeze in on Lake Mendota, my brother Dennis, and quite a mess to get that off and out of the ice. When it's frozen to the ice, I mean, it's really a problem. That is for sure.
Yes, it is.
Right. The early ice off the last couple of years, it kind of scares people too. You know, you got that permanent out there and the ice gets soft early. We haven't had thick ice, so that's kind of a factor too, I think.
I'll wind up with one fish story. I was ice fishing on New Year's Eve on Lake Mendota, and I made a hole. I looked down the hole. I said, it looks pretty good down there. I set my tip up, and I was still kneeling in front of the tip up. I just set it, and the flag come up and hit me in the face, and I caught a 7-pound walleye in 1 minute of fishing. which is probably the most surprise that I think I've ever been. I don't think we caught another one the rest of the night, but that was a nice experience to have. Well, you guys probably have plenty of good experiences.
Can I make one last comment?
Sure.
I'd just like to commend John on his social media posts on promoting selective harvest during this ice fishing season. We are seeing a tremendous amount of pressure this winter, probably due to COVID and people wanting to get out. And John has really been promoting selective harvest on fish. You know, limiting your harvest. Do not, take your bag limit every day. Limit your harvest. And thank you, John, for promoting that.
You're welcome. It's got to be done.
It's got to be. And John, tell people how they can sign up to your place, your site.
You just search for Ross's Sport Shop and Guide Service on Facebook. I do a lot of posting there, and I've got my personal page, and then I also have John Carlson Just Fishing page. So I try to share all the information back and forth between the three pages.
Well, tell you what, it's been a lot of fun talking with you two, and I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I look forward to doing it again.
All right, Skip. Thank you both. Skip Sommerfeld, retired Wisconsin DNR fish biologist, and John Carlson, manager and a guide at Ross's Sports Shop and Guide Service in Phillips, Wisconsin. Tell you what, I have good memories from Solberg Lake in the Phillips area and from Butternut Lake, where he caught some muskies up there, too. So good to have them with us, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you'll stay tuned, because we're going to turn our attention from the water to the air and talk about bald eagles and bald eagle watching days. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.